Welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I would like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. And I always say the first because there are two. In case you don't know, I also produce and conduct with a team of wonderful people, Paganos del Mundo, which is our second bilingual show, which has shows on Spanish and Portuguese. So come to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast and listen to everything. Please listen, download, share. And tonight I have a guest whom I'm very excited to have on the show, Mara Starling. She's from Chester, England. She was born in North Wales, raised in the Isle of Anglesey, and is a native Welsh speaker. She's a transgender woman who has been practicing witchcraft from a very young age, and her witchcraft videos on TikTok have more than a million views. Mara is a celebrant and a tarot reader, and she runs moots, gatherings, and open rituals. She was featured in the BBC Wales documentary series Young Welsh and Pretty Religious, and she is here on the show tonight, and I'm so happy to have you here, Mara. Welcome, welcome, welcome. How are you?
Hello. Oh, thank you so much for having me, and I'm very happy to be here as well. I'm very good, thank you. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. I'm very happy to have you here. We are obviously pre-recording this show because Mara lives in the future, and I live in the past. And my first question, Mara, will be, is patriarchy over?
As far as I can see, unfortunately not, but we're working on it in the future.
we will continue working on it. Yes. Mara, I'm very excited to have you on the show, and I'm going to share with the public the magic of us connecting, because I am very honored to have Christopher Hughes, not only as my mentor as well, but as a friend. And sometime in the past, when I interviewed him, I said, do you know anybody, or who do you think I should keep my eye on? And without missing a beat, he said, Mara Starling. She's my friend, and she's fantastic, and you should follow her on TikTok, and you will love her. And then, of course, I got into TikTok, and now I'm addicted to it. Thank you, Mara.
All my fault.
All your fault. But thank you for accepting this invitation. And of course, when I reached out to her and I invited her, she told me about her upcoming book, which is now a reality. But before we get into the book, Mara, how did you know you were a witch? How did you get into witchcraft and paganism?
Well, I grew up on the Isle of Anglesey, Ynysmon, and I grew up in a very rural area, middle of nowhere, and it was a Welsh-speaking community, so I went to a school that only had 26 students, and I grew up surrounded by the Welsh language and these beautiful landscapes that I fell in love with, and I was always kind of a little bit on the outskirts of everyone in kind of the village. I didn't really have many friends, and I didn't really gel with a lot of people. I think when I was reaching, I think the age of 10 or 11, I started realizing that I was queer and coming to terms with that and living it, embodying it was quite difficult because of how rural and how small the village was. So I was a bit of the oddball. So I spent a lot of time out in the fields and along the coastlines and in nature, in the trees on my own. And I grew to become really connected to nature. And I always had a belief in magic. My favorite things growing up was fairy tales, folk tales, and mythology. I loved reading about fairies and witches and giants and mermaids and all those things. And so I would often like run into the woods and talk to the trees, talk to the stones in the forest and on the floor of the coastal paths. And I would really love going to ancient places, places like Barcelona de Gaures, which is a huge burial chamber, which was only a 40-minute walk from my house. And I used to always run away to there when I felt a little lonely or isolated, because I always felt like there was a spirit to these places. And my grandmother used to, my nain, as we say in Wales, my nain used to read tea leaves and read the crystal ball. So she was a diviner and she divined for people often. You'd often see her kind of like sat at home with her like huge crystal ball on the table, smoking her menthol cigarettes. And she had these huge glasses and she'd just be there looking into the ball going, oh, it's coming. And I just loved her, and I loved her larger than life personality. She had these like long nails that she always had that made her look like a witch. And so we often said, oh, she's a witch. But then when I was about 10 or 11-ish, she died. And I was looking for ways to connect with her again after she died, because she was the only one in the family who fully accepted me as who I was at that point. She would often like sneak me little mermaid dolls and things, which my dad hated because he was like, you have to be masculine, you're a boy back then. So like when she died, I felt like I didn't really belong in my family. And I was looking for ways to connect with her. So I'd often ask my granddad, like, more about her, like, can you tell me more about why she read the tea leaves, why she read the crystal ball? And he always used to be really, really weird about it and say, well, she believed in all that stuff, she believed in all this magic stuff and all that, and she knew about the witches that were in covens on the island and things. And that made me really curious to learn more about witches and covens, so I'd spend all my time looking at books and things to do with witchcraft and magic. And eventually I found a book in a secondhand bookshop in a little town called Llangefni called Spells for Teenage Witches. And that was it for me. I was like, I was engrossed into this book and I started practicing the spells that were in there. And looking back at the book now, I think, oh gosh, I liked that. But it was my introduction to the world of witchcraft and magic. And then I just did little things on my own for many years then. So from the age of 12, I just practiced little spells and rituals that were in the book, and I would go and talk to the trees. And my version of praying back then included like running to the cliffs and standing in the strong winds and screaming into the wind, telling them like what I wanted to happen and to take my pain away and things if anything was going on. And that was how I lived my life until I was about 16, when eventually I finally met Christopher, and he introduced me to the continuum of kind of Welsh magic and Welsh mythology and folklore, and how that could inspire and inform your practice. And then I started delving deeper into my own culture, my own heritage, because up until that point, I felt like my culture was a problem, because growing up in such a rural place, it was almost like if you were different, if you were a bit of an outcast, you stood out like a sore thumb. And I felt like, oh, I can't wait to leave. I can't wait to run away to live in some big city in England, and away from my culture and heritage. And then when I met Chris, that all changed, because I started realizing that there's always been outcasts in my culture. There have always been these practitioners of magic and divination and the arts associated with magic. And it just helped me not only connect to myself on a deeper level, but also my culture and my heritage, and really embrace the landscape that I lived in and who I am. So yeah, that's how I kind of started.
What a beautiful story, and you do have this enchantress energy, because I always listen to my guests, obviously, but the way you tell the story is like I'm hanging on to every single word that you're saying, and no wonder you're such a successful creator on TikTok. And I'm so glad that you found Chris in your life. When he touches a life, he changes that life. I can attest to that personally. And so now you are a full practicing witchcraft, Wiccan, no, witch, I'm sorry. And recognize that it is in your culture and that you didn't need to go anywhere, that you are where you're supposed to be. And then you marry those two worlds. And you start doing TikTok. And I cannot have you on this show without asking you, how in the world we have you doing TikToks? You are one of the most talented and well-respected witchcraft TikToker. You're on the witch talk part of TikTok. And I said it in passing earlier, but it's the truth. Everybody knows I'm addicted to TikTok. I love creativity and I love people and I love connections through technology. I just love it. I'm a Gen Xer, but I love technology. But TikTok, man, love it or hate it, it's here to stay. I love it. I'm addicted because of you, because Christopher Hughes told me, download TikTok and watch Mara. And here I went, and now I'm addicted to it. How in the world this shy little girl from Anglesey becomes this TikTok superstar?
Oh gosh. So I think it all started years and years ago when I started sharing more about myself online. So I started seeing the internet as a way to connect to other witches. Living in such a rural area, I didn't have many friends who were interested in the same things as me. And my little circle of witches was very small. So I wanted to talk to more people. And so I joined all sorts of like Facebook groups initially and then Instagram. And so I kind of exploded onto the internet and found a way to really, I guess, express my witchcraft in a way that couldn't be done in real life. And then when I moved away from Wales, I moved, I think in 2015, I moved to England for university originally. And that was really hard because I really started to connect to my landscape on a really deep level. And then moving to not only a new place that was in basically a different country with a different culture, but also being in a more urban area where there were more people and it was a city atmosphere, I just could not exist there in the way that I wanted to. And I was really homesick. Hiraethu, we'd say in Welsh. I was feeling hiraeth or homesickness for my landscape and my home and my culture. And so I started sharing bits of Welsh folklore, Welsh magic onto Instagram originally. And that never took off. And I wasn't expecting it to take off at all, really. I was just doing it for myself. And then that transferred over to YouTube, where I made videos about Welsh, Celtic paganism and folk magic. And then eventually, I think it was during the first lockdown, or maybe the second, I think it was sometime in 2021, maybe in January, where we'd been locked in for so long and I couldn't travel home. I couldn't travel home to see my family or to see the land that I was so deeply connected to. And I was reading so much about folklore and I was writing my own book. And so I decided one day, I'll just make a video about the tradition of herbal healing that exists in Wales. And I was going to do it for YouTube, but then a few nights before I made the video, I downloaded TikTok because I was bored and wanted something to do. And I decided, okay, I'll do something for YouTube, but I'll also film a little thing for TikTok. And because it's such a short form platform where you only had, back then it was only a minute, you have up to 3 minutes now. Back then it was only a minute. I was like, how am I going to express all this information in 60 seconds that I want to explain? So I went very, I have a bit of a theatre background. So I went a bit campy with it and I started dancing around these old, we have ruins of old cathedrals and monuments here in Chester, which is the city I live in now. So I was dancing around those things, just telling people the story of the legend of Llyn y Fan Fach. And then that went on to Welsh herbal healing. And then I started talking about Welsh witchcraft. And I was really shocked because I did it just for me and just for my friends. I thought I'll probably have like 1,000 followers, maybe, and just talk about these things every now and then. And then after I uploaded those really campy, larger than life videos, I started gaining so many followers and it became a bit overwhelming, but also really fun because I was able to share the magic of my land and my heritage with people from across the world. And that meant that I connected with people that were similar to me as well, people who hadn't been able to connect with their culture in any profound kind of way until they'd found the magical aspects of it. And I met so many amazing people through it that I just kept doing it and kept doing it. And I know that Witch Talk has this air of and kind of like tentativeness surrounding it. A lot of people are really scared to approach it because they've heard horrible things. There's a lot of sensationalist kind of things going on there. But it is a platform that is mostly filled with young people, so you're going to have a little bit of that. But I love it. I love it as a platform because it does allow me to be creative and to express these stories. It allows me to reach more people than I ever would have in the past, and it's helped me meet so many amazing people. And so, yeah, now I don't post as often as I'd like to, but I do love creating my little videos for that.
And speaking, I'm going to speak like a true witch here. I keep telling people, I'm an advocate for technology. I mean, here we are recording this show, having this show being produced both as a podcast and as a video. I mean, technology has all these wonderful sides to it, but if we don't look as older people, if we don't look at what the young people are doing or the younger people are doing, then we're doomed. Then we're gonna live with the dinosaurs, and then that's it. And I love that there is a connection there. And I know that a lot of young people on TikTok don't like to have the old people like me or older people into it, but the fact that we're kind of forced to be there with each other, it kind of like creates this symbiotic relationship where we learn from each other. I learn from young people. I love learning from young people. And if you're an old person and you don't learn from old people, shame on you. But anyway, there is something that is really striking for me about the material and the things that you create for TikTok, the visuals, of course, the landscape, the beautiful places that we would never be able to see if it were not for the videos that y'all produce. But also, Mara, I'm very curious about asking you, and I'm gonna lead this question with an anecdote. When I started my witchcraft practice, I self-described as a Wiccan 12 years ago, and I was told and I was taught that as long as you honor the earth, you can practice with any pantheon. So I used to practice with the so-called Aztec pantheon, right? So I have witchcraft and indigenous practice. That was my very own practice, very highly criticized. And when I met my very first high priestess from Mexico, the first question that I ask is, which pantheon do you work with? And she came back to me on a very unwelcoming way, saying these very words: if it's not Celtic, it's not Wicca. And that phrase was the little spark that started the engine of 10 years of podcasting and then some, right? Whatever comes after. Because it's not like that. Witchcraft is witchcraft. Yet we look a lot into Welsh and Celtic and all of that. But what is your take as a person from the culture that we basically appropriate or misappropriate or emulate or try to be so much like you and your ancestral practices? And we probably are not. So what is your take on that as a native person from that land?
So when I look into, for example, traditional kind of British Wicca in the Gardnerian sense and such, when you think of the way that a lot of older forms of Wicca were practiced, and you look into the gods that they venerated, the holidays that they practiced, I see a lot of similarity with my culture specifically, or with the culture of neighboring countries such as Ireland and Scotland. For example, I remember when I was about 16, I first read the story of Ceridwen and Taliesin's birth. And in that story, it talks about Ceridwen, this witch who creates this potion made of pure divine inspiration. And in order for the potion to work and to actually become the magic that it is, it has to boil and bubble for a year and a day. And I remember looking at it and going, oh, I wonder if that's where the whole initiatory tradition of a year and a day comes from. And then you start learning about like the wheel of the year, looking into where exactly these traditions come from and seeing that there are some Celtic elements to it and that there are elements that have been kind of misconstrued or misunderstood. That was a lot of beginnings for me of understanding what exactly the origins of these things were and looking deeper into the culture that I was in. But I think for me personally, my exploration, my book especially, it was an exploration of what is witchcraft within a more kind of indigenous and native sense to Wales. Like, how does witchcraft actually exist here beyond the more kind of modern beliefs within neo-paganism today? And it's sometimes really hard because I think people do, like you say, correlate anything Celtic with Wicca because that's how it has been for so many years and for so many decades now. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that a lot of the pioneers of modern witchcraft, such as like Gerald Gardner, Alexanders, Dorian Valiente, they came from Britain. And when you're in the landscape that is Britain, it's hard not to, when you're trying to look back at the history of the paganism that existed in this land, not to look at the Celtic practices and bring that into it. But I really like at the moment how a lot of people are moving away from constructing a practice that's based on something else, such as the more kind of British traditional Wicca, and instead looking to their own culture, their own heritage, and their own land. I love that. I've heard a lot of people almost be a little critical of it, the way that some people talk about this current. I will admit that it is a bit of a trend at the minute that people are turning to folk magic and quote unquote traditional witchcraft and moving away from Wicca. But at the same time, a lot of that interest in folk magic and traditional witchcraft has to do with becoming attuned with what is around you in the landscape. And I think that's a little more important than trying to squash someone else's culture into your own practice, looking instead at what is here, right in front of you, on your doorstep, here available to you. And that was really the time that my practice as a witch myself, boomed and became something more than just, I don't know how to explain it. It's almost like before I started incorporating my own landscape and my own culture into my practice was very basic and I never really knew what I was doing. It was in that moment that I looked to the land itself and looked to the stories that were connected to my history, my culture, my ancestry, that I started going, okay, this makes sense and this works now. And there's so much to look into and there's so much to learn and explore. And I love seeing that lately among the pagan communities online and in person, the amount of people who are really getting stuck in the mud, deep hands-on into their own land, their own culture, whatever is there right in front of them. But I do think it can get a bit complicated when it comes to, I don't know if you've heard this a lot as well, being someone who interviews people for podcasts and such, but since I started having a following online, I get a lot of messages from people who live in America or in Australia, who lived on colonized land, they will message me and they'll say, "You talk a lot about, connecting to the land that you're on, but I'm on stolen land. So is that a bit tricky? Like, how do I connect to the land that I'm on when the land that I'm on is not the land that my ancestors are originally from?" And I think in those moments, a lot of people can become fixated on trying to pull on their ancestry, their DNA, whatever that they find about themselves. And because a lot of those people who are in America or Australia are from the UK or from other parts of Europe, they try and bring in those European traditions into their practice, which I think is great and fine. But it can at times, and this is something I've spoken to with a lot of kind of native Welsh, Cornish, and Scottish practitioners that I'm friends with, it can sometimes come across as a little costumey, almost like they have no current present ties with that culture that they're drawing on, but they're still bringing it into their practice and making it as if it's their culture and it belongs to them, and then taking it out of the cultural context. So it is a murky area because it's good that instead of appropriating, say, indigenous practices that are closed to them, they're looking instead to their ancestry. But then I think it's also possible to appropriate and misappropriate the practices of your ancestors as well, if you see it as this fantastical thing One thing I see a lot within the Celtic spheres is the hype towards the more kind of medieval Game of Thrones style aesthetic that, and I'm guilty of that. I mean, I've got this weird witchy aesthetic going on, but the almost cosplay like aesthetic that goes on with the Celtic practices and the misunderstandings. Because going back to TikTok for a second, one of the main reasons that I decided to join TikTok was because it looked fun. That was the main reason. But then also I was scrolling through one day and I came across this lady who was talking about Rhiannon, the Welsh goddess Rhiannon. And I was really excited because I thought, oh my gosh, she's going to talk about Rhiannon. She's going to talk about something to do with my culture. I never see anything about Wales, really. It's almost always Irish if someone's talking about Celtic things. So let's listen to what she has to say. And then the things that she said, I have no idea where they came from. I was like, what? Where does this come from? Why do you think that about Rhiannon? And so I thought, okay, I'm going to create my own account. And I'm going to talk about the actual historical and cultural context of these practices and put them into a more kind of grounded, realistic view. Because I think sometimes if you're so disconnected from the culture, it's easy to fall for the misconceptions that have been built up around it as well. And that makes me sound really petty, I'm sure. I joined TikTok in order to correct someone. But that's the way I kind of live my life. I see a lot of people complain about TikTok and say, oh, it's full of drama and it's full of misinformation. But if you see drama and misinformation, go on there and correct it. What's stopping you? So yeah, I think for me personally, the issue I have with the Celtic practices within a more modern neo-pagan approach is if they're being divorced from their cultural context and they're being warped into something that they're not, I get a little, I don't know, almost antsy about it. And I'm like, no, you can't do this. But at the same time, it is also nice to see people being really attuned to what is within their own family's history, what is within their own ancestry. But I think, as I said, my witchcraft really took off when I looked to what was around me rather than looking to cultures far away and looking to landscapes far away. Looking at exactly what is on your doorstep and what is right there for you is something that can really take your practice to a new level. But we have to also be considerate of what might not be appropriate.
Yes, absolutely. A phrase that I have been saying for the last, I don't know, 10 years maybe is the difference between appreciation and appropriation is education, you know.
Absolutely.
And when you have that education that is coming from the native peoples of the land and the culture, and a great difference between appreciating what the cultures are and learning about the cultures, and then going about it and integrating that respectfully is quite different from, case in point, I have been, dangled this book about Santa Muerte, written by a person that is not of Mexican descent. And I'm like, no. I'm Mexican from Mexico. I have lived the experience. I know who she is. She has nothing to do with Day of the Dead. And you are not going to come and school me about Day of the Dead or that icon that has nothing to do with dead. I mean, globalization and this global communications, it has two sides of a coin because there is always two sides of a coin. But I highly appreciate you and the labor that you're doing educating people and the ability to say I was wrong and I was wrong and I didn't know what this was. And I can almost picture your face when this person was talking about Rhiannon, and you probably go like, what? Because that's what's happened to me when I hear people who are not Mexican talking about like the Mexica or the Tenochcas or the stuff like that. But anyway, let's move into what we are here for today. Your book, Welsh
Book.
Witchcraft, your book, your say it, my book. Oh my goodness.
It's very strange. It's surreal that this is
It
happening.
is wonderful. And of course, our common friend here says, Starling offers a new, fresh, and authentic voice that expresses the timeless magic of her native Wales. Christopher Hughes, author of From the Cauldron Born. This is, you know, the fact that that is on the cover. I'm excited for you. I'm happy for you. And I told you, this is no lie, people. When I got the book, the very first thing I did was text Mara with the photo of me holding the book, like, I got it. Welsh Witchcraft, A Guide to the Spirits, Lore, and Magic of Wales by Mara Starling. How in the world did you become a writer, and what inspired you to birth this book?
Oh gosh, I feel like I'm going to be talking about him a lot right now, but Christopher really gave me the kick up the backside that I needed to get this done. Because when I met Chris when I was a teenager, I told him the first time we met, I want to write a book. I really want to write a book. But back then, I didn't know what about. I didn't know what I wanted to write about. I just knew I want to write a book because I loved writing. I used to write little stories myself all the time. And then when I was in university and I was studying dance, of all things, my favorite part of my studies was writing essays, writing my dissertation, studying and learning. And so I knew I always wanted to be a writer because it sparked joy within me, but I could never really pinpoint what I wanted to write about. And I remember in about 2016, 17, I had written this whole, like, I think I wrote 40,000 words of a book about being trans and being a witch and the complications surrounding that, how a lot of witchcraft has to do with these very binary ideas of what gender is and the divine feminine, divine masculine. And so I wrote this 40,000 word thing all about that, but it never felt right. It was always like, okay, this, I like that I'm talking about this, but I don't have the passion within it yet to really go for it, nor the knowledge to really present this the way I want to. And so I sat down with myself and I said, what do I want to write about? What do I actually want to write about that I'll actually finish? And I messaged Chris. I think there was a day in 2019 or 2020 where I messaged Chris and I was like, would you be mad at me if I also wrote a book about Welsh magical traditions? I don't want you to think I'm stepping on your toes. I don't want to, you know, take your genre. And he was like, Mara, don't be ridiculous. Like, that would be amazing. We need more voices talking about Welsh magical practices, and especially more native voices, because from the small handful of people that do write about Welsh practices, I think it's only me and Chris that actually grew up and were raised within Wales right now. And so the more people that actually have that context of growing up in the culture, speaking the language, being there, is not really there. And I struggled with that, like, accepting that I had a little bit of an edge being actually from the culture. Because I remember my first draft of the book, there was a part of it somewhere in the beginning where I was talking about this phenomena, how, like, the majority of people who have written about Welsh practices are not Welsh. And I was like, I think I had a little addendum in there where I was like, not that that makes them any less authentic or anything. They're just as authentic. It's fine, because I didn't want to offend anyone. But then I think my editor came back to me and she was like, but it does make you more authentic because you actually are from that culture and you need to own that. You need to actually own that and stand in your power and say, this is my culture. This is my language. This is my heritage. And I want to share that with you all. And that makes it special because it's so deeply intertwined into who you are, your identity as a person. And so, like, when I was writing this book, I knew that I wanted to write about witchcraft, because a lot of the books that do exist focus more so on druidry, because druidry is so interwoven into our culture. The bardic tradition is so important to who we are as a people, and it still influences our culture today. But I remember, I think I read a book by an author named Gemma Garry, who writes about traditional witchcraft from a Cornish perspective. And Cornwall and Wales are very linked, because we have very similar languages, very similar cultures. And so when I was reading Gemma Garry's books on traditional Cornish witchcraft and folk magic, I remember thinking to myself, this must exist for Wales as well. There must be something like this in Wales. We must have our own traditions of folk magic and witchcraft that exists within it. And by just wondering that, that sent me down a rabbit hole of all these amazing things where I was learning about terminology surrounding magic, the words that we used to have to describe magical practitioners, and how even just something as simple as so in the Welsh language, the word that we use for witch, if we're writing, say, a fantasy story or something, is gwrach. And then to go into history and learn that actually that word is more so associated with folklore and with these giant kind of mythical creatures that exist, and nothing to do with witchcraft and magic in the way we view it today. But we do have words for witchcraft and magic in the way that we would see it today. Just those little rabbit holes of like diving down these things, and it was all connected to language and to the landscape. And I needed to get it all down, and I eventually did into the book that I created. But this book is kind of like an introductory guide. This is, I always tell people, this is the book I wanted when I was growing up, the book that I wished existed. Because I think many authors will say the best advice they ever got was write the book you wish you had, write the book that you wish could exist. And that was this for me. I needed this book when I was a teenager. I needed this book to help me connect to the landscape that I was within. And it wasn't available really. And I remember the feeling, the intense feeling of joy when I found Chris, when I found Christopher and the Anglesey Druids, that like, oh, I'm not alone. I have other pagans that I can go to. And I remember like diving deep into Chris's writings and feeling just so inspired by the way he wrote. And I hope that my book can be that for another generation of witches now growing up in Wales. So it's an exploration of Welsh magical practices from a historic, folkloric, mythological perspective, but it's also really intertwined into my own practice. There's a lot in there about my own personal explorations of witchcraft and how I came to be the witch that I am today. So it's a personal journal, but also a deep dive into the history and cultural continuum of magic from Wales.
I love to hear you and to hear the passion behind your words. And of course, we got to talk about Chris because he's a wonderful teacher and it's a testament to his greatness. A good teacher wants you to do, to be, to create. And a good teacher will never, ever feel jealous or threatened by your success and your blossoming in the world. And just so you know, Mara, and the world needs to know, the way that Christopher Hughes talks about you, it is that is it. If you have the love and recognition of one person, and that one person is Christopher Hughes, you already are on the other side. So well deserved it, and believe it and breathe it in. And receive it because with this, and I'm glad to hear you say this is the first of many because we need it. We need to know where the words that we just say so carelessly sometimes are so familiar, where they come from. And I loved that you talk about all the myths and all the fairy and folklore tales and about Rhiannon and Talish and all these names that I don't know how to pronounce, and that is intertwined with your life story and your practice. And I encourage everybody, as soon as this is available, which will be pretty soon, today is January 31st, it is already available to pre-order in the Big Book websites. I can say the name, I don't care. But tell us a little bit about the actual pro because you have a lot in this book. It looks small, but it ain't small. There is a lot of information in it. So you have the fairy tales and you have the folklore magic, and then you have exercises so people can understand. And I love your approach. Learn where it comes from. Understand what you're doing. Now do it. which is quite different from, oh yeah, we call it Mabon, and it's going to be Mabon. And I love that y'all have come out to educate us that it's not Mabon. There's no such thing. It's Mabon, and stuff like that. So, how do you structure the book? That has to be a titanic task.
Oh gosh. So I remember when I was going into writing the book, my first comment to, so my partner, he was helping me throughout this whole process and he was dealing with all my breakdowns and my moments of despair where I was like, I can't write. But he was helping me and I said to him, I want to work out the structure before I even start writing. I want to know exactly what this book is going to include and how it's going to flow. And I knew that I wanted this book to work for anybody who picks it up. And I've been proven right now. I remember saying back then, because I think having the title Welsh Witchcraft, there will be people who will pick it up who are not witches, who have never picked up a book on paganism or witchcraft or magic or spirituality before in their life, because they might be interested in learning about the history of witchcraft in their culture, or they might just be really intrigued by the cover and by the name and the title for whatever reason, whether they have ancestry, whether they just know a thing or two about Welsh. There will be people who will pick it up and will not know anything about witchcraft. And I think I was very clever to think that that would happen, because I've already received messages from people via social media since I've announced the book who say, I know nothing about witchcraft, but I can't wait for your book. So I'm glad I wrote it with that in mind, that I wanted anybody to be able to pick it up and still be able to follow it slightly. But I do make it very clear at the beginning that it is created for witches who want to incorporate these things into their magical pathway and their practice. So I knew that every chapter was going to include an exercise, an activity that you could partake in. And I knew that I wanted to include traditional spells and rituals and rites that come from historical sources within the Welsh continuum. But I also wanted to include a little insight into my practice, or how I would teach you if I was teaching you this as a physical class, how I would guide you through it. So it includes stories about my own introduction into witchcraft and my own connection to the land. But then it also includes a deep dive into the landscape and the cultural continuum of magic from Wales. It looks into why our native language even has a history associated with magic, and why it's important to use words and such in a certain way, and how poetry and such can also inspire the magic that we practice. It delves into the landscape itself, the various aspects of the land that I was raised in that inspired me and caused me to question things. But then it also goes into mythology, which I think, compared to a lot of other people, I only touch on very briefly because I wanted to focus more so on the witchcraft, which comes from more of a folkloric essence. But I do go into the mythology, the gods and goddesses of the land. And then I also go into the fairies and the folklore, which I think is something that should be explored even further at some point. But then there's also a practical Welsh. I think this was the chapter that I was most worried about going into writing the book, was the practical Welsh witchery chapter, which delves into various magical practices, spells, curses, conjurations, and such that come from the culture of Wales. And I had numerous reasons for being worried about that chapter, because on one hand, a lot of folk magic from Wales comes from a very Christian period in time. So you'll see a lot of reference to Christianity within them, which can sometimes make people shut down entirely. They don't want to hear about Christianity, not even the magical side of it. Another thing was that there are curses and there are, like things that we would consider baneful magic. And I didn't want to ignore that those things exist, because they do. In a historical sense, people did curse people in Wales. And I wanted to talk about it and the ethicality of it all, because I think within paganism today, we are very much influenced by these ideals of whether it's threefold law or karma or whatever. And so anytime you talk about curses or baneful magic, people shut down. Again, similarly to when you talk about Christianity, they shut down and they go, no, that's wrong. I don't want anything to do with that. And I make it very clear in the book to say, witchcraft it historically was always the art and the tool of the oppressed, the poor, the disheveled, the ones who didn't have any power within society. And it's not really changed that much to now. It's still, you still find that a lot of minorities, poor people, people who are on the outskirts, they still get drawn to witchcraft and magic. And so when you hear about curses and baneful magic, that was in many ways people's method of trying to take power back for themselves. So I knew it was important to still include that, even if I do ruffle a few feathers in the process. And then the book also goes on to talk about the ritual year. I'm reluctant to say Wheel of the Year because I say very, very early on in that chapter that it's not the Wheel of the Year because we know that historically people in Wales wouldn't have celebrated the Wheel of the Year in the way that modern pagans and witches do today. But we do have a lot of interesting traditions and customs that people can celebrate. And I'm looking at the horse skull behind me right now in the camera, like thinking about traditions such as the Mari Lwyd I had to include in the book because I think it's important to bring up these old customs and traditions that would otherwise be lost if people didn't carry on putting an effort into them. So yeah, it's a book that I hope will guide the reader down these kind of areas of study that I've been so passionate about for so many years. But I didn't want to just give people this information and say, and that's it. I wanted to give it to them and go, now go and do it more yourself. Go and actually practice. Go and study yourself. Go and find out more. Here's a little taste, but there's so much more to it. So that was the way I kind of decided to structure the book, to make it accessible for beginners and to include information that I wish I would have known when I was younger.
Yeah, absolutely. I love your spirit, and I love your spirit, and I love that you take back on that. Magic and witchcraft are a defense mechanism for the oppressed, and all you have to do is look, don't touch, look at the African diaspora magic, the hoodoo, the voodoo, the santeria, the candomblé, the ifa. All of that is rebellion and it's empowerment against colonization. And people don't understand that in this Christianized worlds that we were Christianized or Catholicized by colonization, or this folk magic traditions melded into it. And I have said this, I hate this joke, but I say it all the time. I can say this joke because I'm Mexican. Mexico is one of the most pagan countries in the world. Don't tell the Mexicans. They think they're Catholic. You know, there is so much that is intertwined, and the baneful and the cursing. It is part of the resistance and it's part of magic. And if you, I'm going to say it, I'm going to say it. Yes, I'm going to say it. If you think the magic is only rainbows and unicorns, it's because you have the privilege to believe that. And not all of us have that privilege. We are part of a oppressed culture, you know. And one of my apprentices said this to me and blew my mind when we were talking about the Christianization of all these European lands. She looked at me and she said, "Man, the colonizers did it to us, and it felt like they were aliens coming from other lands, but they did it to themselves." And when she said that, she almost got me in tears because I was like, "Damn, that is truth. They did it to themselves. They tried to eradicate their own native land worshiping, earth-based sacredness, and it is a shame. And that is why we need these books so we can conserve and appreciate and learn, not appropriate, and then practice. So thank you for giving us that, Mara. And thank you. I have to tell you, I know now is the monologue of Laura. Please bear with me. One of the things that makes me very, very happy to be a pagan and a witch is the Wheel of the Year, bigger quotes. You have no idea how much I appreciate the breakdown that you do on the book about it's not a wheel, but there are stages to it. And to let us in how You all do it over there. And there is at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, I don't know, over a dozen changes. And the Mexica people, the indigenous people of Mexico, also were obsessed with time, hence all these calendars. Not all of them are Aztec calendars, please, people. The breaking down of time, such a human thing to do, right? Breaking down time. I love your approach about it. Can you, without giving too much of the book, can you talk a little bit about it deeper at this moment?
I think the main kind of focus when I was writing that chapter was first and foremost to share the things that we actually do to this day, things that we still celebrate to this day, not just things from the past. So, for example, I talk a little bit about the winter solstice and winter traditions and New Year's Eve traditions, but I also talk about aspects of today that still might seem magical or different to people who would be looking from the outside in. But to us in Wales, it's just normal, every kind of year type of thing. One of those is, I remember, I know it's going to be different from household to household and region to region in Wales, but in my region, on New Year's Eve, we always ushered in the new year by opening all the doors in the house. And my mum would always say, we have to let the new year in through one of the doors and the old year out through the other door. And we'd often like cook food and stuff at that time to bring prosperity into the house for that time of year. And so I talk about that, but then I also go into some older traditions, such as the Mari Lwyd, which is a wassailing custom, which was to help the poor get food and things at that time of year. But there's also other lesser known customs, such as the Kalenig, which was another almost like wassailing type custom where people go door to door, almost like a Christmas time trick or treat with a little bit of Christmas carols going on. And then we also had things such as there's a really interesting tradition which was recorded in an old book that I have, of sprinkling water. So you'd get a sprig of pine and you'd dip it into water that was collected from a well, and you'd sprinkle it on people, and you would use that water to bless them for the year ahead and to wash away anything from the year previous that would weigh them down. And these things, to me, they just seem so magical. So I thought that's the basis, is things that are traditionally part of Welsh culture from history that might have been forgotten, but I think should be brought back, and also things that we still do to this day. So I talk a lot about festivals that are important to me, such as the Nadolig or Christmas season, and also the seasons surrounding spring. We have a lot of celebrations around spring and summer as well. But in particular, I talk a lot about these three celebrations throughout the year, which I think is the closest thing to the traditional kind of pagan wheel of the year, which was in Wales. We had the Tair Ysbrydnos, which are 3 nights of the year that it was said that worlds were more open to the more spiritual aspects of life. So in old kind of Welsh folklore and Welsh folk belief, there's almost this belief that the other world and our world are deeply connected at all times. It's very easy to slip from our world into the other world. But on the Tair Ysbrydnos, the three spirit nights of the year, it's almost like the any shrouds or veils that might exist between the two worlds, they don't exist anymore. And we are one and the same with the spirit world and the realm of our ancestors, the realm of the dead, and the realm of the fairies and the spirits of the land. And I wanted to go deep into those three Tair Ysbrydnos because I found them really fascinating. And we still celebrate some of them to some extent, in particular Calan Gaeaf, which is our version of Samhain or Halloween, where we honor our ancestors, where we value those who have passed over. We tend to the graves of those who have died. And we also believe that the spirits of the other world and also the spirits of the dead roam free with us during that night, on October 31st, going into November 1st. So I talk a lot about those traditions because I really loved them growing up, and we still had a lot of those traditions in my area. Specifically, I remember we used to have the tradition of walking around the graveyard three times, and it was said that if you did that on the night of Calan Gaeaf, that you would end up seeing an apparition, either of a ghost or the devil or something. And there are other traditions from all over Wales that say that if you walk around a graveyard three times and look through the peephole of the church, that you'd see visions of who might die in the year ahead. But then also it's kind of twofold. There's Norse Galan Gaeaf, which is the 31st, where we honor the where we kind of celebrate, I suppose, the spirits of the dead and the spirits of the other world, and we guard from them and protect ourselves from them, but we also have a lot of mischievous fun. And then there's Calan Gaeaf itself, which is usually the 1st of November, where we honor the dead and we venerate our ancestors and we call to them, and we I personally create altars to them in the home, and there's a tradition of leaving food for them on the table when you create a meal for yourself and your family, and lighting a candle in the window to guide them home and such. So there's a lot of talk about the Tairysbrydnos Nos and how they relate to our lives today and how they would have related to the lives of our ancestors in history. So yeah, I just wanted to introduce people to these traditions that I'm passionate about, but I fear might be lost if we don't start preserving them and taking note of them, because it's a real shame, I think, that I didn't know about a lot of the things I wrote about before I wrote about them. So I wrote about the things I do know about from when I was a child, but then I also wrote about things that I wish we knew more about, and why are we allowing these traditions to die? So yeah, that was my approach to that chapter.
Well, we are not anymore because now we have books like this wonderful book, and I will never cease to be amazed of how much of the Welsh and Druid customs, traditions, and folk practices made it into Catholicism, was transferred by the colonizers to the Americas, and married the indigenous traditions of Mexico in particular. I cannot speak for other indigenous traditions because I don't know them, but so much of what we now practice on modern day Mexican Catholicism has roots on Welsh practices. It's amazing. But if you ask the church, of course they're gonna say, no, you're delusional, you're crazy, you know. That's why it fascinates me to learn so much more about all this Welsh witchcraft. And I'm very honored and happy to have you on the show today. We are getting close to closing time for the show. So two more things that I want to ask you is, do you have any plans for the future? I know we're in the middle of a pandemic. You know, I know we're in the middle of this still. We shouldn't have been, but we still are. So coming forward after, when is the official release of the book, and do you have any commitments, and where can we get the book?
Well, so the book officially releases, I think the date that you can find on bookselling sites is February the 8th or somewhere around that. So it's early February in the US. And then here in the UK and Europe, I think it's early March. So very soon, very exciting, very scary as well. But you should be able to get it either on pre-order now from any website or from your local bookseller if you go to them and ask them to order it as well. The book is kind of coming out in a perfect time because our here in Wales, the 1st of March is St. David's Day, which has become kind of like a celebration of Wales and Welsh culture. Even though it's associated with a saint, it has just become, over the last few decades, a celebration of just being Welsh. And the release date for it in the UK is the 1st of March. So I'm really pleased with that, that it's coincided with that. I'm hoping to do, if so long as it's safe to do so, some events here in my local area. I'm hoping to do some book signings and to do some talks and such with local shops. So I've already spoken to a few shops in North Wales and in Chester, here where I am, and hopefully I'll get invited to some others if it's safe to do so. And hopefully in future, maybe I can make it over the sea as well if it clears up and is safe to do so. But yeah. And I'm hoping as well to do a lot of live streaming and such with the book as it gets closer, but mostly I'm just going to be anticipating everybody's reviews and thoughts as they come in, and I'm very excited to hear what everyone thinks about it.
And this is not your first interview about the book, is it?
No, I've done a few. I don't know if I'm not sure if I've done specific interviews just about the book, but I've been on Inciting a Riot and the Magnolias and Magic podcast, as well as the Paducah Wellness podcast, and I have a few lined up for later in the year as well. So it's really strange, kind of. It's like I said at the beginning, it's surreal now, because just a year ago, I feel like I most of these people that I've spoken to didn't know me. And now I'm going on to podcasts, and it's a bit like, is this happening? Is this real?
It
So
is.
it is
Yes, it is.
exciting.
Embrace it. And in a true Mexican fashion, I will say to you, aquí tienes tu casa. You can come where, if you ever make it overseas, Chicago, you have a home to land, a warm pillow and a fluffy puppy that will welcome you. And I am very honored to have had you in the show. I feel like many people that follow you on TikTok, I feel like I know you and I know we have just met. But thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, your knowledge, and especially your passion about your culture and your lived experiences, because it is through sharing our personal experiences that we enrich this diverse, magical world in which we live. So thank you so much for being on the show today. And I will leave you the microphone so you can say goodbye to your audience.
Well, thank you so much, Diolch o Galon am Galfiad. Thank you so much for having me on again. And yes, so keep an eye out for any future projects as well, because I'm hoping to have a few surprises up my sleeve for the next year as well. But yes, Welsh witchcraft. So excited for everyone to get their hands on it, and I hope it lives up to the expectation. And thank you once again, Laura, for having me on today.
Thank you for being on the show. Welsh Witchcraft, A Guide to the Spirits, Lore, and Magic of Wales by Mara Starling. Available wherever books are available. If your local shop don't have it, tell your local shop to get it. And obviously, I have to say thank you, Mara. And thank you to Christopher Hughes for making this connection. I love it. And thank you for thank you to all of you who are listening, whether you're listening live or watching live or watching later, it doesn't matter. Just to remind you, there are over 600 hours of podcasts on the CSNP website, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. You have shows by the one and only Selena Fox, Mystic, Nature Mystic, and Nature Spirituality on Sundays and Wednesdays. You have Circle Talk 2 Tuesdays a month. You have Moon Magic 2 Thursdays a month. You have Blue Marble, the third Friday of the month, and you have Paganos del Mundo every Saturday, and obviously Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, every Monday of the month. And to every single one of you, thank you, thank you, thank you for being here. Thank you, Mara. Thank you to everybody to listen. Thank you to CSMP. And until we meet again, never forget that you are loved. Bye bye.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.